Before we get to talk with Nick here in the studio, let's bring back a part of this conversation that he had, Gene Shepherd had, when he visited the Maryville Library back in 1984. He was talking about his writing. And at that time, it was, of course, the new movie, A Christmas Story. He has some interesting comments about that, too. And here's just an excerpt of the conversation that Gene Shepherd had to the audience at the Maryville Library.
For years, I've been writing and doing television and movies and one thing and another. About a mythical town. And don't forget, I write about a mythical town. I don't write about him. You must understand that. No, you listen carefully, you may learn something about my writing. I write about a town which I call Holman, Indiana. Not based on the street of Holman, but a mythical town that is a composite of all these northern Indiana towns. Beautiful downtown Whiting. East Chicago in the dusk, Indiana Harbor in the fly season, and all these towns, you see, I have put into a composite town, and it's like Faulkner with creating a composite Mississippi town, which he created, so I've created this southern, or this Indiana town. It's a fiction. Now, I have had people, and my stories are fiction too, by the way, and I've had people who swear they remember when certain things happen, which really scares me. Because that makes me wonder about the whole goddamn study of history. I'm sure there are old, ancient families in Georgia who will tell you that their great-grandfather served under Rhett Butler. Now, a lot of you are saying, what's funny about that? Famous Civil War. So they composite when you're creating fiction. Now, how many of you saw A Christmas Story? Well, that never happened, you know. This came right out of this diseased Indiana brain. Now, I'm sure a lot of you said, well, that's just like a thing that happened to me. The essence of good fiction is to actually convince you that you did this thing, in spite of the fact that everybody in your family knows you didn't. But you're now so totally convinced that you swear that you went. I even got a letter from somebody after the movie opened. This is a fascinating letter. It came to me. Says, you're going to be pleased to know they were writing Crown Point or some other cultural center, and she wrote me a note. And she says, dear Mr. Shepherd, I'm sure you'll be pleased to know that my uncle was the Santa Claus. It came out of my head. I never went to see Santa Claus in my life as a kid. And he remembers you asking him for the baby gun. Well, I'll tell you, maybe the reason I don't come back to this town much is the minute I get out on Calumet Avenue, I start getting this nervous feeling in my stomach, because right down the street is Hammond High, where some of the most hellish moments in my life were living.
If you want to hear the full conversation, you can go to the Lake County Public Library YouTube channel and take a look at this conversation, of which I actually was arranged by our guest today. Nick was with us in the studio, and I understand, Nick Mattis, that you're the fellow that actually made that a video of that visit to the Lake County Public Library possible.
Yeah, well, I had a copy of it, and I called the library, and I wanted to see if they had the actual 3/4-inch tape that it was used to tape that event. And sure enough, you know, they couldn't find it because they were doing the renovations. Mm-hmm. And this is maybe about, what, 3-4 years ago?
Yeah, at least, yeah.
So I kind of stayed on them for about a year, year and a half. And finally, in one of their warehouses, they found a box of some of the few remaining materials that were Gene Shepherd related in their warehouse. And I was so glad. So they made the copy and they put it up online so all of us can enjoy it. So
that's great. Yeah. I was just only had a chance to put, like I said, about 3.5 minutes of this on the air. And this is a much longer conversation.
It's an hour.
But it's a very, I kind of skimmed through the last part of it just to catch it. And you'll find it very interesting. And we know that we bring you Sundays with Shep on every single week here on Lakeshore Public Radio. And you get to hear Gene Shepherd, the storyteller, as he actually was on New York City Radio.
WR.
And this is a very interesting way to get to hear Gene Shepherd in his later years, before a crowd here in Northwest Indiana. Mm-hmm. And he didn't always come back very often, especially in his latter year city.
No, you know, after this event that I'm aware of, he came for an IU, Indiana University, honorary degree that they bestowed upon him, and it was basically 1995, I believe, but I don't know the month. And Professor Lane got a hold of me, and I went through all the correspondence and all the nomination and the you know, things that were going back and forth between the board members. It was pretty interesting to see, you know. But being the fact that Gene Shepherd at that time had made an impact on the media, you know, they gave him the degree. But he never really did graduate Indiana University. But he came up here in Northwest Indiana. I believe it was Calumet College at that time with a connection to Indiana University.
Right.
Or I should say Indiana University, where Calumet College is now, in the Whiting campus. And he took, some classes there, but nothing to, you know, really steer him into communications and radio, you know, like we would say today. He basically, you know, started off when he was at Hammond High on WJOB, reading some of the high school football and baseball scores and things of that nature, basketball, I should say. And then he went to the war. He got drafted and went to the war, and he came back, and then he worked at WJOB for a short time. And then he got a job offer. He ended up in Cleveland, and then he landed in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And then from there, he spent a couple years bouncing around station to station. And the story from the folks in Cincinnati tell me that, you know, Shepherd got fired from his first three jobs, basically, because he couldn't stop talking in between the songs that he was playing on the radio. He was hired, basically, to just play music.
Oh, right.
And he started with a little story here and there, and, you know, that's really Gene's legacy, is the fact that he loved to tell stories and talk. And so anyways, he got fired, and you know, the audience members, the fans, people that were out there in the public, they called the station back and said, you know, who was that guy? We want to hear more of that. That's what we want to hear, basically. And, you know, Shepherd used to really get down on management and talk about and criticize the fact that what are we doing here in radio? You know, we're having a radio producer, a music producer show up with his musician, play their record so they can make money. They leave town and, you know, but what do we, you know, and then we getting really nothing out of it, basically. And so he wanted to use radio for more than just playing records. And I think at the time, you know, some people give him credit for the talk format that he has, where he just showed up for about an hour, a little under an hour, and speak and tell stories or whatever it may be. And so he didn't have guest call-ins. He didn't interview anybody to talk about their movie or their radio show or whatever, their music. He basically used radio to talk to you. Basically,
in fact, just recently here, one of the Sundays with Shep episodes that we had on that Ryan Priest picked out was one of the conversations that Gene Shepherd had with one of his colleagues at the time, who also had a talk show on WOR Radio in New York, Long John Neble, who was considered one of the founding fathers of talk radio.
Yep.
When you realize they really both were in a way, in their own special sort of way.
Yep.
Long John may have been on maybe earlier in the evening before Shep was on, but Shep was the fellow who held the listeners all through the overnight hours.
Yeah,
the crew, you know, the people that worked overnight in the factories and the bakeries and the places that
the night people,
I guess, is the clean way of putting
right.
And they were the ones that were particular fans of Gene Shepherd, and luckily he was able to connect with them. And even though maybe most of these people were from East Coast, they never even heard of Indiana, much less of Holman, Indiana, or Hammond, Indiana.
Right.
They still could connect with him because of the way they could see it in their own minds through his voice, telling the stories that we all get to know and love now.
Yeah, he just made it so so beautifully simple in a way of putting it. And, you know, talking about your childhood, he would hit all those elements about your childhood that you can relate to no matter where you're from. He may have used Hammond as a backdrop of his stories because that's where he grew up, but in a sense, that kid living out in New Jersey or New York or anywhere up and down that East Coast had all these people for 21, 22 years were, you know, able to hear his shows live most of the nights during the weekday. And, you know, just wonderful stories. And I can just imagine what it was like to have those little transistor radios at the time, you know, and pulling out that antenna, you know, around 11 o'clock, you know, trying to dial in WOR and catching his voice. And a lot of people, you know, from Pennsylvania, Ron Simon, the curator of the Paley Center, he told me basically that, you know, he lived in Pennsylvania, and he was, you know, one winter night, he's going through the airwaves trying to catch some entertainment in the middle of the night, and he heard a faint voice, and he stayed on it, and it was Shepard, and, you know, he heard a couple stories about the steel mills or whatever it might be, and it fascinated him, and he stayed on it. The same with a buddy of Shepard's, Ron De La Chiesa, out in Boston.
In fact, you talked with him, and he is in the documentary entitled Shep. Yeah. Here's what Ron had to say to Nick Mattis here some time ago when he first got a chance to learn about Shep, actually hearing him on that.
He was a real close personal friend of
Shep's. Yes.
Yeah.
Like a lot of other people at night, I would scan the radio. It had knobs. In those days, radios had knobs. And I would scan the radio, and I'd be listening, and I'd hear Frank Sinatra, and I'd hear a classical music station, then I'd hear a news broadcast. And then all of a sudden, I came across this voice. And it was a voice of somebody I had never heard. But he was telling this wonderful story about working in a steel mill in Hammond, Indiana. And he said, you know what it's really like to work in a steel mill in the summer? Do you know what that's like? I bet none of you have experienced what I've experienced. And I stayed there. And like a sorcerer, he brought me in. He seduced me into his world at that moment. And from then on, I listened to him every night on WOR, where he was doing these long monologue shows interspersed with music. And every night was different. He'd create a different adventure in your mind. And I imagined what this man looked like. I couldn't conceive of what he looked like because he was this anonymous voice coming out of the radio, but captivating me in a way that no one else had ever done. But even more so, the ability to draw you in. In other words, once you were listening to Gene, there was no way you could stop. Because he was like a drug. I think that's a good way to describe him.
Ron De La Chiesa, who is a Boston radio personality, who in turn was enticed as a kid by listening to Gene Shepard, the fella of which the documentary Shep is being put together by our guest here in studio, Nick Mattis. This has been a labor of love, and it seems like a long time labor of love. You've been working on this project. Tell us about how involved it is, all the people. Well, we can't mention all the people, a lot of people involved in this, and a lot of snippets get to put together that will tell a very good picture to the viewer of what Gene Shepard's really like.
Well, as we were talking just before we went on the air, there's so many different facets of Gene Shepard. I mean, if he was just an actor and I was doing a documentary or just an actor, my scope is so much more focused and narrow. Mm-hmm. But in Shepard's case, not only, you know, he started off telling stories on radio and he had a radio career, which is fascinating within itself, and a documentary within itself. But then you talk about his book writing, his live appearances that he made, his personal side of his life, the impact that he made on media that people, I hope, will watch the documentary eventually and see the different things he did and the different people from writers to producers to nuclear physicists. I mean, the guy, I can't recall his name, the chess player who was a kid, mm-hmm. protege, what was his name? Bobby Fischer.
Bobby Fischer, yes.
You know, who used to stalk Shepard. I mean, you know, then you got Spielberg who put Wonder Years together based on Shepard's stories about growing up in Hammond, and that's basically the Wonder Years. Then you got Hugh Hefner, you know, enjoying his writing, the way he wrote, and sending him off to England to hang out with a boy band called the Beatles, 63-64, you know, for a couple weeks. And so there's just so many, you know, Dee Snider is a current, you know, name I could throw out there, people relate, but, you know, we're not going to take it. Yeah. That's a part of a Shepard spoof that he did on the radio where he had everybody put their radio on a windowsill and he would yell, you know, we're not going to take it anymore or something to that extent. And that mm-hmm. came from the movie Network as well.
Now, fill us in on the latest on how you're doing. I guess at some point you're finishing up with the interviews for the documentary.
Yep. The interviews, I'm going to New York, New Jersey. I got to go to North Carolina. There's a few people there. Florida, there's all kinds of things going on in Florida there. And I'm still, you know, and there's a person out in California California that I'd like to go out and interview. And, you know, and there's a few other people here and there, but Matthew Broderick is one that just confirmed he'd want to do an interview. And, you know, he just did the musical live. He was a narrator that was on Fox just recently. Mm-hmm. But what some many people may not know is that his father, James Broderick, was the father, was the old man during the PBS series that Shepard used to put together out in, with the Boston crew. And so I'm told by many people that worked with James Broderick that he was a fascinating man, a very gracious actor, and, you know, just a nice guy to be around. And Matthew, you know, really looked up to his father. And so this is a chance to revisit some of the, his father's and his own role with mm-hmm. Shepard.
Now, when you get the, a chance to get all the film together or tape, whichever the case may be, and get to doing the editing work, what's your goal for getting this off so that we can all get to enjoy the documentary?
Okay, so, you know, I don't know whether you realize it or not, but I'm using Shepard's own voice to narrate his own life story, even
right.
though he's been, you know, he passed away in 1999. I don't want to say the word dead for some reason because the guy in my head is still alive. And to many people who listen to this guy, you know, he's got his podcast out there. We have here at the local, you know, Lakeshore Radio, Sundays with Shep. The guy is going to be around for a long time. You know, I kind of worry, and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to avoid your question, but I'll get to it. But the guy, you know, it takes him 40 minutes, 45 minutes to make a point, to entertain you with various different stories, but I guess a theme. Or a message. Today we have that instant, you know, I need a two-liner right. and entertain me, you know. And so that's the only worry that I have, but I think people eventually will, you know, succumb to that and be patient and listen to them. But, you know, the interviews are wrapping up. I'll have a teaser. I have another teaser I've been working on, but with this Matthew Broderick interview, I want to add him on that as well. But, you know, I would have to say sometime in late spring is probably when I'll have definitely a pilot where I can actually shop around and to local art and music festivals and things of that nature and really try and bring Shepard to the forefront. You know, and I'm working on a screenplay as well while I'm doing this. I'm trying to do two things at once.
Well, you have all these things, all these possible ideas together. You might as well work at them if you can.
You know, I look at Leonardo DiCaprio, and yeah. I would love there to see go. Leonardo DiCaprio play Shepard.
Well,
I mean, you know, and it would be very fascinating. And maybe the way that you could do it, too, maybe using Shepard's voice and have Leo lip-syncing it, you know, because everybody's so used to that Shepard mm-hmm. voice, you know. So that would be quite a challenge for Leo. And he pulls off the look. If you ever look at the pictures he has with the goatee and the piercing blue eyes, he looks just like Gene Shepard.